Hello everyone, my name is Royalson and you are listening to International Talks. As for today's episode, we will discuss about the government shutdown that has finally concluded, some current events relating with our committee, and some international news including Venezuela, the UN, and much more that has changed the course of the Foreign Affairs Committee. I'd like to point out a few headlines in the White House as of right now. Trump still continues to bicker in Capitol Hill with the disapproval funding of the wall, with the government now reopened for the next 3 weeks, which we'll further discuss later in today's episode. Also, former advisor Roger Stone was arrested for accounts of several indictments on the Mueller investigation. With that being said, for today's episode, we are going to tackle the Foreign Affairs Committee and what it poses to our government and the effects of what this committee can provide to us Americans and Congress. For those of you who are not familiar with the Foreign Affairs Committee, it is a committee in Congress that is monitored by the House that discusses how its responsibilities are to have legislation and oversight pertaining to foreign assistance, executive agreements, enforcement of the United Nations, and various other matters. The committee in itself has jurisdiction over legislation that correlates to the administration of the Export Admission Act. It can also conduct oversight and investigations with respect to any matter within the jurisdiction to the committee. Within the committee are a good deal of subcommittees that are linked to the Foreign Affairs Committee, and they are the Trade, Nonproliferation, International Terrorism, Global Health, Global Human Rights, Energy, Western Hemisphere, and Civilian Security Subcommittee. All these subcommittees together help inform the main committee on what's going on around the world so that they can further spread information to the rest of Congress and the federal government jointly. In theory, all these subcommittees are essential to the Foreign Affairs Committee because without them, they would be in the dark on what's going on around in the world, and the main point of the Foreign Affairs Committee is to monitor what's going around in the world. Altogether, the Foreign Affairs Committee plays a major role with how the U.S. operates with other countries and the potential power of its jurisdiction, which makes it a very capable system as a whole. With the many ties the Foreign Affairs Committee deals with, this brings me to my next contention, the United Nations. The United Nations is a vital matter to the Foreign Affairs Committee. To understand why the UN was created, we have to go back in time, specifically 1940. Keep in your mind that World War II was just ending and the world was realizing the torrential aftermath of it. The US, Great Britain, and other countries came together to make the Treaty of Versailles, and this action created the United Nations. The goals of the UN was to provide world peace and security, develop stable relations with other nations, provide a status for countries to come together and meet UN's purpose, and to foster cooperations between nations in order to solve diplomatic and humanitarian problems. The United Nations ties with all the signed members influence the policy of what the committee must do. An example of this is when Venezuela started to open up its sanctions due to the terrible state the country has been in. The opening of the sanctions proves how the UN could step in and negate the problem from further spreading. And another example is the recent terrorist attacks in Kenya from a man called Al-Shabaab. The attack in itself has been a long-term issue of terrorism that has surrounded the country. So as a result, the UN has taken notice and have stated that they would like to improve visibility and establishment between nations to get to the bottom of terrorism and take preliminary actions to solve it head-on. In addition, the United States has its own problems to solve, which brings me to my next point, the government shutdown. The government being shut down created a massive surge of disproportionality in the way the government operated. The result of this is shown after what Trump initially started. One example of this is how many government workers and employees are still going to work even though they're not getting paid, along with many other federal government services now being shut down. Now I want you, the listeners, to think about what this means to us as an American society. With all that's been going on, the main purpose of this shutdown was to, quote, build a wall, end quote. Or in better terms, create funding for the wall and how the budget of immigration should be handled. The mass effect of this shutdown has taken focus off foreign affairs and more towards Trump saying that the border control is a, quote, national security emergency, end quote. Speaking of which, one of Trump's powers as the President of the United States is that he can bypass all of the voting in Congress for the wall and declare it a national security emergency and use emergency funds in the federal government to have the wall immediately constructed. Nevertheless, President Trump stated that he would make Mexico pay for the wall, which hasn't been so good for him since Mexico's President Andrés Obrador says he refuses. This course of action that President Trump tried to implement puts us Americans on bad terms with Mexico. Overall, this federal government shutdown has proven catastrophic to the society of America and to the rest of Congress and the cabinet. With that being said, coming up next on International Talks, we will be joined by congressmen who are members of the Foreign Affairs Committee, and now here are a few words from our sponsors.
This episode of International Talks is sponsored by AP U.S. Government and Politics by College Board. AP U.S. Government and Politics provides a college-level, nonpartisan introduction to key political concepts, ideas, institutions, policies, interactions, roles, and behaviors that characterize the constitutional system and political culture of the United States.
This episode is also sponsored by the football coach of AP Friendship High, Adam Sanders, who made this podcast episode happen today. Thank you.
Okay, welcome back everybody to International Talks. Joining us today are four members of the Foreign Affairs Committee, and they are Elliot Engel, Chairman of the Committee.
Hello.
Michael McCall, 10th Congressional District for Texas.
Hey.
Tim Burchett, 2nd Congressional District for Tennessee.
How we doing?
And last but not least, Mr. Colin Allred, Texas's 32nd Congressional District.
Hello, hope everyone's doing very well.
Hey, everybody. All right, so I just have a couple of questions here today that I'd like to get your take on. So let's just go in a roundtable fashion. Is that cool with you guys?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, awesome. So the first question is, what is your current stance on the Venezuela sanctions, and will Venezuela be of any challenge to us in America for the long term?
So... recently, President Donald Trump has stated that he's in support of the proclaimed President Juan Guaido, and he is getting full support in everything that the current president, so right now there's two presidents in Venezuela.
Okay.
He's not hearing or listening to whatever Nicolas Maduro says.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that if something ever gets to happen, I don't think Venezuela will be a problem. Because they don't have a really tough army or military forces. But I do believe they could be of use of us in the future since they have a really big petroleum refinery. So it's really...
Exactly.
We could make a deal with... Hopefully, if everything goes well and their situation gets better, we could make a deal and get a lot of petroleum, and then our gas prices would be so much cheaper.
Yeah, it's more of a business... endeavor rather than a political endeavor, even though Trump...
How so?
So Venezuela is an importer of so many different goods that the U.S. can't produce, and it's a rare import, which you can't really get it from different many different countries, and most of the countries that import those goods we don't have good relations with. So this is also a political tactic, but I feel like there is some business involved.
Yes, of course, there's a lot of controversy with this, since, like, right now, the Saudi Arabia deal, it looks like people are criticizing Trump about it.
Mm-hmm.
But Venezuela right now is not in a great political situation or economic situation. So if the U.S. supports Venezuela and overall they help the people, they have to, like, look at it on the good side. Like, yeah, we might make a deal in the future, but it's still going to benefit both countries. And right now, it's not only the U.S., it's Argentina, Brazil, Chile. Like, a lot of countries are supporting this president that proclaimed himself. And we just have to wait what happens. But the people are out there and they're trying to benefit from this.
Mr. Chairman, do you have anything to say on this?
According to the press reports that the Trump administration is preparing to add Venezuela to the list of state sponsors of terrorism,
mm-hmm.
if the president intends to do so, he must demonstrate to Caracas he has repeatedly provided support for acts of international terrorism. As the law requires thus far, I have seen no evidence of this. This morning, I asked the State Department to provide the Foreign Affairs Committee with written evidence demonstrating that Venezuela meets the criteria to meet this statute.
Uh-huh.
Make no mistake, President Maduro is a cruel dictator who violates the human rights of the Venezuelan people on a daily basis.
Okay.
But we must continue to hold him and his cronies accountable, while also ensuring that President Trump does not continue his heartless deportation policy
mm-hmm.
towards Venezuelans living in the United States. But at the same time, the state sponsor of terrorism list must be used judiciously to maintain its seriousness and integrity, and countries added must meet the legal standard.
Okay.
So I'm in accord with many of my peers. However, I realize that that Venezuela has many non-renewable resources that we together as humanity need to cooperate with and better share and make use of. Just as a group of people. So I think that it's really important that we not necessarily make a deal, but cooperate and get on the same page with how we're using these resources.
Thank you. All right, my next question is, what type of image does the government shutdown demonstrate to our allies?
Can you explain what you're trying to say?
So how does this government shutdown put like a picture to our countries, like Russia, or the Great Britain, you know, how our shutdown puts like an image to them as what we are as a country and what we can do?
I think it puts a bad image upon the entire United States because it shows that we are not very compatible with other nations, and that if we can't even run ourselves, then there's really no point of even these other countries are pretty much
exactly
making a fool of us because we mm-hmm. we can't even open a government with our new president, and with all these rumors going around with Russia involving our election, it's just a big mess at this point.
I feel as if I agree with Chairman Engel here. There's just too much that we can lose in respect to our image from other countries due to this government shutdown, just because it gives us this bad image that we cannot pull our country together and we cannot get to a resolution in time, which affects many more workers of the U.S. rather than giving us our compatibility with other nations. So, I disagree. I think that our nation's doing great. I mean, our gross domestic product is insane right now. And our minority unemployment is the lowest it's ever been in years. And to add on to that, our recent 35-day government shutdown was the largest in U.S. federal history ever. It is representative of our nation's need to maintain border security. That a border wars isn't start and end. Don't you have walls around your house? This demonstrates that we will need to work to maintain a safe border and thus a safe nation.
All right, so I disagree with him. I believe that this problem with the government shutdown is showing that the U.S. has a weakness.
Yeah.
And that this could affect us in the future, since so many nations know that we're just struggling right now to keep our government together. There's so many workers that didn't work for so many days, didn't get paid, and they just couldn't do anything because of the government shutdown. It was so long, and it affected so many people. And mm-hmm. there's just not a point on shutting the government just for that. There's other ways to figure this out, uh-huh. and that's not just the right way.
I just feel like a government shutdown's a little over the edge. For border security is definitely a problem.
You
think so? We have a lot of illegal immigrants in mm-hmm. the U.S., but the 5.7 billion border wall is definitely not the solution. And followed by a government shutdown just weakens his point.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like his only option now is a national emergency, using his power as the chief of staff. So what he's going to boil down to is he's going to defer all the defense and national homeland security funds to the border wall, then he's going to build it. But I feel like this shutdown is conveying that we just don't have that national unity.
Yeah.
And we just don't have the power to influence other governments if we can't even influence our own.
Yeah.
I agree with him. So we do need more stronger border security, but a plain concrete wall or steel wall is just not going to cut it. First of all, the amount of funds that we need for that is just incredible and unnecessary. That they could be used for something else, like education or education or health systems or something that could benefit the people, instead of just spending $5 billion on a wall that might not be like completely secure at all.
Uh-huh.
So I believe we do need stronger security on the border, but a wall is just not it. We could like increase the border patrol. Or, as I know, the situation with immigrants is pretty strong right now, and it's affecting the U.S. But the U.S. has also benefited from the immigrants, and I don't think they should, like, just put a wall in there, because it's just not going to help any of us. It's going to be a waste of money and time, and it's just going to show that the U.S. is just reckless on doing things.
Okay.
I also agree with
Colin.
With Colin, because as the commissioner, or as the chairman, I think it puts a bad image in front of us to the entire world, as building a wall I don't think would ever work in any certain situation. There's easily things to go around it, and the immigration, even right now, is to a point where it's affected us, but it wouldn't be drastic. So I think that overall Trump is just making a fool of the United States.
My fourth question, should the UN change its methods for addressing certain issues such as global healthcare or access to clean food and water?
So far, we've seen the UN work. We've seen how everything, like, they're doing something, but we don't see it on a big dramatic change. Big countries that need water and food and just health supplies or education, like us, we're a first world country. Like, everybody should have these benefits that we have, and the UN is just not working hard enough to make those benefits for everyone fast enough, so everybody could like have a decent education, have a food on their table every day.
Exactly.
So they're doing something, but their work ethic and efficiency is just not fast enough or good enough for all the amount of people that need like supplies.
While I do somewhat agree with you, the first world country isn't really something that we can control. We can't give money to like smaller countries that are more impoverished than the United States. And in that case of changing the clean food and water, I don't think it would really affect things, because it wouldn't change things in low impoverished countries. It would only change things in first world.
Okay.
Well, I don't say that think every country just can automatically become a first world country. Supplying food to the people that need it is our main problem. Even in the U.S., we still have a lot of poverty rates or unemployment rate, and we're trying to figure out how to help. But it's not about changing their GDP or their economy. It's just help the people there to keep being alive, like staying there, so they can keep working hard and trying to work towards what they want.
I agree. I agree totally with Al right here. The UN, if they create a new solution, I feel like the impact will be more on the wealthier countries. And like the impoverished ones will have a bit of,
because they're still developing.
Yes. They're still developing, and like It's all in proportion. If you're increasing the water quality in the world, you can't really increase it by a percent, but you're increasing it by a proportion of what it is now. Most of it is going to go to the first world countries, because they can afford it, first of all, and it's just easier to transport it there because it's safer, and the quality is already pretty good in most, like, the U.S., Canada.
the major countries.
Yeah, the major countries. And I feel like third world countries won't reap the benefits as much as they should because this is mainly for them. So I feel like there could be a little bit of a change, but the UN has a good start.
Okay.
See, I partially agree. However, I see that this is more of a humanitarian issue. Not that I think we shouldn't get involved in this. I think we should be a pioneer in this type of effort in order to help other people and other nations that are struggling. However, I think that we should more immediately focus on our nation's issues and figure out what we're doing specifically with, like, I don't know, the government shutdown. Like, I mean, we just go from, like, we're all flipping out about the shutdown to, like, let's give water to these countries that we're never going to actually give water. Like, let's improve the water quality where it already is good to try to get some better water in other countries. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. I think time could be better spent elsewhere at this current moment. Not to say we shouldn't get involved in this, but for right now.
Okay, so for my final question, I want to give some context. So Kenya was recently faced with a terrorist attack, and I'd like to know your opinion on how a bipartisan resolution could affect Kenya.
Since Al-Qaeda attacked the U.S. embassies in both Kenya and Tanzania in August, Kenya has been a target for many terrorist organizations, led by armed gunmen Al-Shabaab. He killed at least 21 people in a 20-hour siege during in Kenya. So we also had a 9/11 survivor over there who was one of the casualties of the attack. So
That's tragic.
It kind of brought this crisis to light, and we formed a bipartisan resolution with the chairman, McCall and Bass, and just during our rescue mission, we saved over 700 civilians from the complex, and it was really successful.
I think it was a great effort from both parts. I think that we tried to save a lot of lives and did some really great things. I think that looking forward in the future, I think the bipartisan reformation would be really good because it allows for, like it says, two people to be in two parties to really collaborate, so it's not such a...
conservative or liberal
exactly it's
endeavor.
It's in the middle. It'll be longer lasting because it'll reflect the views of both parties.
Mr. Chairman, do you have anything to say on this?
I think that I think that it would help Kenya because it would create less conflict between the nation, because if there were two different parties that would really go at each other and cause more terror that has already happened. I think that if there's a bipartisan and they can reach an agreement on how to help Kenya and not hurt Kenya, it can really overall improve everything. So
I agree with the chairman. If it weren't bipartisan, there would probably be, as stated by Tom here, there would probably be a partisan attempt in reforming one way or another, whether it be a conservative or liberal way, which could in turn also hurt Kenya in the process. So it could have been like, it could have been a failure if it weren't bipartisan.
Okay.
You're avoiding something.
This has been the Foreign Affairs Committee. Thank you all members for joining me today.
Thank you
for having us.
Yep.
With that interview being said, I'd like to thank you, the listeners, for making this possible. Without you guys, this podcast wouldn't ever exist. This is your host, Royalson Shrestha, signing off.